Washington, final edition. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, a completely preventable economic disaster. We'll speak with Texas Republican Congressman Michael Burgess, a member of the critical House Energy and Commerce Committee, which has watched this whole debate over energy reform and cap and trade proceed from its earliest stages. We'll find out why he is voting no in this debate, why he sees this as an economic calamity that is being intentionally foisted upon the American people, what it will mean in terms of higher taxes, lost jobs, and as he says, it's based on science that has never been scrutinized by Congress. We'll speak with Representative Burgess in just a moment. Also in this edition, shocking. John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, will be with us to offer his thoughts on Mark Sanford's political and personal self-destruction. John will also weigh in on the president's changing rhetoric on Iran, as well as his very public push the last few days for the cap-and-trade energy plan. We'll get a North Korean double shot from the Capitol steps and transition time. This is the final broadcast version of Dateline Washington as we transition full-time on Monday to an online version of Radio America's news operation. I'll have a look back at the 14-year history of this program. All of that plus our top news is straight ahead. We begin with the energy debate, and we begin right now. My first guest in this edition is Texas Congressman Michael Burgess. He's a Republican representing the Lone Star State's 26th Congressional District, and he's a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. We want to get his thoughts on this pivotal end-of-the-week debate on cap and trade as it plays out on the House floor. And Congressman, thanks so much for being with us today.
Greg, it's great to be with you.
What have you said in your floor comments about how you're voting and why?
Well, I will be voting against this piece of legislation. As you know, it's a massive bill. In fact, the rule for the bill we got last night or early this morning at 3 a.m., it was well over 300 pages, and I will submit to you, no one in this body read that rule before they voted, and that rule, I'm sure, was full of all kinds of little deals they cut at the last moment in order to bring some of the farm state Democrats into the fold to vote for this bill. This thing has been just a literal grab bag of giveaways ever since it first hit our committee several weeks ago. The people who wrote the bill were deeply involved in the lobby effort down on K Street. If you go on Google and type in U.S. cap, you will see probably some of the companies that have been involved in producing this piece of legislation. It's an industry-written bill, the kind of the very thing that we were criticized for when we were in power. This is it's on display full force today. Ultimately, what this package today is going to do is cost the American consumer a great deal of money. Products will go up in price at every step along the line of production or transfer from field to fork. Every bit of food will have an additional surcharge at every stop along the way. Our jobs are going to be under increasing pressure. The companies will be under increasing pressure to move jobs overseas. And you'd ask yourself, well, why would industries go along with this? Well, the reason they're going along with this is because they're being given goodies in the form of carbon credits. And these carbon credits are likely to go up in value over time. And these carbon credits will be traded on some market somewhere. There'll be derivatives. There'll be swaps. There'll be all of the financial instruments that we've come to know and love so well that have been associated with the bursting of the bubble in the mortgage-backed security market or with Enron. We're going to see that duplicated in this carbon trading. It's a recipe for disaster. We're going to have a carbon bubble that will burst at some point, and shockwaves will go through the economy yet again, and it's all preventable. It is all preventable. If we want to talk about energy production and increasing our production from renewables, we can do that. My state of Texas is the leader in production of wind energy. In fact, the wind energy that we are enjoying today came about because of the vision and the investment of our governor back in the 90s. Oh, yes, by the way, that was George W. Bush, who has been vilified regularly on the floor of the House today because he did supposedly nothing about global warming. But here was the visionary, if you will, back in Texas, who said, we're going to create a large portfolio portfolio of our energy production from renewables. Texas does have a vast potential for solar energy. I've got two companies in my district that are producing solar cells. The technology is improving. Ultimately, we will be able to derive a much more significant portion of our energy from wind and solar, but we're not there yet. And to say we're going to blast hydrocarbons out of our economy with this cap and trade bill and simply go to wind, solar, tides, stars, whatever it is that we're going to get our energy from, is preposterous. And the American economy will not stand that type of shock. And goodness knows we're scarcely able to, our economy is not on as strong a footing as it is right now. And to deliver this kind of blow to the American economy right now, the only reason that you would want to do that is if you wanted to hurt the American economy even further. And apparently some people do.
We're talking with Texas Congressman Michael Burgess. And Congressman, you mentioned a minute ago that Farm State Democrats were reluctant initially to go along with this plan. Explain why, and what have been some of the incentives used to try and draw them on to the side of the Democratic majority here?
I will tell you, first off, what's drawn them back into the fold is not entirely clear. Now, they've gotten some credit for what are called land use offsets for putting land into production of corn ethanol, for example. They do get some credits, some offsets for that activity, and they are able to go back and recapture some of those offsets for much, much earlier in the decade, obviously preceding any time that this bill has been under consideration. So when I say that there are things being given away, those offsets, those credits in the carbon market will be available to some of the farmers in the Midwest who are growing ethanol. Ethanol is an alternative fuel, and the automobile manufacturing in this country has recognized that. We have flex fuel vehicles. We could argue as to whether or not a greater investment in ethanol is wise or not. The fact is the Bush administration made significant investment in subsidizing ethanol. Farmers have switched their growth patterns over to accommodate this, and now they are asking for and apparently getting carbon credits in this new carbon trading scheme going back as far as 2002-2001.
Congressman, in terms of your district, what will it mean for your constituents and the electricity rates and gas prices they pay eventually once this is fully implemented?
Well, some figures that we were given yesterday, and so they're relatively new, but in Texas, the average Texas household could expect to see an increase in utility rates or overall increase in energy rates that would cost them a little north of $1,300 a year. Not every state will see that, and there are some states, particularly those in the Northeast and those on the West Coast, that are going to see actually a reduction in their bills. So obviously those members of Congress that represent those areas are more enthusiastic about the passage of this bill because they're going to be subsidized by the good people of Texas. Jobs in Texas in the year 2012 is estimated will reduce by 4,000, and then it goes up from there. So we're in a point in our economic situation where maybe the financial markets have stabilized, maybe the stock market is going to stabilize, but certainly job destruction is still going on at a very rapid rate. It may have slowed a little bit last month, but we're still in a period of destroying jobs, not creating jobs. Well, guess what? You put this massive energy tax on things, and you're going to accelerate that job destruction.
Congressman, where do you stand on the whole premise of this? And I'm referring to the science of climate change or global warming. The terminology keeps changing. Obviously, we saw a string of years there where the temperature seemed to increase. Now, for the past 10-plus years, it seems to be on the decrease. And so the argument seems to be changing a little bit from the other side of the aisle. What is your belief on the type of climate that we're dealing with right now and whether this legislation would have any impact on it whatsoever?
Great question. A couple of things. First off, I think there's a lot of common ground here, and unfortunately, we chose not to seek out the common ground and work together. The common ground would be, is it in the best interest of the United States to reduce energy consumption? And you can certainly make a security argument. In fact, our good friend down in Texas, Boone Pickens, has done exactly that. You can't go along importing foreign oil. You can't fund both sides of the war on terror and expect to win. So from a security standpoint, reducing energy consumption in this country is a good thing. From an economic standpoint, right now our economy is in difficulty, and if we had greater use of dollars that we weren't having to spend on the energy sector, if we could spend those in other parts of our daily lives, that would be a good thing. So from an economic standpoint, we would have a lot of common ground. And where we part ways is on the issue of human-caused climate change or human-caused global warming. I might stipulate that the climate is changing, but the climate has always been changing on our Earth. It is not something that has been static for any significant period of time, one way or the other. The big question is right now, the people who believe the temperature is going up, is that increase in temperature caused by normal variation in solar cycles, or is it being caused by a man-made activity? And of course, the other side believes wholeheartedly that it is man-made activity. That seems like incredible hubris to me. And if you believe it is man-made activity, then you believe that man can change the climate by dialing back the amount of carbon that is put into the atmosphere. Bear in mind, a good number of these carbon molecules are coming out of the tundra in the north. And of course, the global warming folks say that's because the Earth is warming and the warmer temperatures are driving carbon out of the tundra. But what if those warming temperatures are being caused by a change in the solar cycles? And then it is, in fact, the solar cycle that is responsible for the increased carbon in the environment for precisely that reason, driving carbon out of the permafrost and out of the upper areas of the Earth's crust. Again, no one has the answer to that. I asked the head of NOAA in one of our committee hearings, could you please show me the smoking gun? We're fixing to change our American economy in a big way. So please, sir, show me, share with me the data that you have on where mankind is irrefutably responsible for this. He said it doesn't exist. I asked Dr. Stephen Chu, the new head of the Department of Energy, the Secretary of Energy, the cabinet position. He's a Nobel Prize laureate. He came to our committee and testified, and I said, please, sir, will you show me the irrefutable evidence that mankind is responsible for this change in the environment? He said it was a consensus from scientists around the globe. I said, no, I need the evidence. Where is the smoking gun? And he said, let me get back to you in a few weeks. I have an appointment to see him in the middle of July, and I'm obviously looking forward to that date. Perhaps we can visit again after we have that meeting. But the fact is, no one was, through 60 hours of testimony leading up to us working on this bill earlier this year, no one from the scientific community could provide irrefutable evidence that indeed it is mankind that is causing this to happen.
Congressman, unfortunately, our time is up. Very good of you, sir, to take time out of a very busy debate to be with us. Thank you.
I'm very grateful to have the opportunity.
Texas Congressman Michael Burgess represents his state's 26th congressional district, member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. This is Dateline Washington.